Chapter 34. Midnight on Nar Shaddaa ends all attempts to pretend the moon isn't a hub of criminals. Colt is twitchy at Shock's elbow, armor hidden back on the ship, blaster entirely visible across his back. Shock can't see his face, but the first emotion when she brushes the edges of his mind is annoyance, followed by tension. And Shock knows better than to try and calm him in this situation. He won't feel better until they're safely back on the ship, and that won't be for a while yet. Gently, she touches his mind, just enough to make herself obvious. A silent, "We walk into this danger together." And then reaches out, finding Blitz and Havoc in the midst of the press. Havoc is on the rooftops above them, shadowing their path with his jetpack to help him navigate the gaps between buildings, and Blitz is following on the ground, half a block ahead. Both of them acknowledge her touches, not pausing, and Shock leaves them to their plans. "I really wish you'd wear a hood, sir," Colt mutters from her side, and glares at a Toydarian that passes just a little too close. Shock snorts softly. "My Montrails make it rather less than practical," she says, dry. And Colt pauses for a moment before he sighs in rueful agreement. Chuckling, Shock turns, and without a Jedi's robes, no one even gives her a second glance as she passes into a dark, narrow alley, lit by more signs boasting the residents than any streetlights. Below their feet, one level down, Shock can feel the hum of the speeders, the press of more minds. But the one they're here for is up ahead, tucked back in a small bar between two offices. Shock doesn't let him know they're coming, just pulls her mind back, letting her presence fade to almost nothing in the Force. Reaches out to Havoc instead, and he takes the instructions, agrees. Shock can just see the edge of his form hunker down, blaster rifle coming up as he watches the entrance. And behind them, Blitz closes the gap, slipping around to a side door and ducking through. "Prepared for it to go badly?" Colt asks, and tugs the edge of the wrap around his face loose, eyes scanning the alley. "With Quinlan? Always." Shock takes a step. A hand catches her elbow, hauling her back and around, just before the door swings open. Colt shoves her into a shadowy corner, body blocking the sight of her from the street, as Asajj Ventress stalks out of the bar. Shock has been a Jedi too long to let her flare of alarm show. Doesn't react aggressively, even though she wants to, because Ventress is a Jedi killer, a monster drowned in darkness, and it roils against Shock's skin as Ventress pauses. She scans the alley, looking furious, and Shock can't help her faint tensing as Ventress's hand settles against one of her lightsabers. Instantly, Ventress reacts. Her head turns towards them sharply. And Shock drags Colt towards her another step, pulls his head down so that even his build will be hard to make out, wraps her hands around the back of his head, shifts so that her Leku markings are hidden beneath the width of his shoulders, and then realizes suddenly, starkly, that she has no idea what to do now. They need a reason to be like this, or Ventress will see, will notice. Colt's eyes are wide, startled. But as there's a step behind them, he leans in, and Shock catches one half-second flicker of, "Sorry, General, please don't court-martial me for this," before his mouth slants over hers. For one instant, Shock is entirely caught off guard. Can't breathe, can't think, but Colt's hands are on her waist, hauling her up. And Shock pulls the plan from his mind, wraps her arms around his neck and lets him lift her, gets her legs around his waist, and a moment later, Colt's back hits the wall of the bar as he laughs, loud and put on, their mouths jarred apart by the force of it. Shock laughs too, makes it a drunken giggle, and it's purely ridiculous, wholly absurd, but she ducks her head, leans down as Colt leans up, and It's the perfect way to hide both of their faces. Shock's markings. The fact that Colt is so clearly a clone. It's clever and cunning and the perfect way to make someone avert their eyes, but Colt's mouth is careful, even if it's just a kiss for show. His hands under her thighs are gentle, despite the strain of holding all her weight, and he tips his head up into it, breath hitching as his lips scrape Shock's sharp teeth, the motion awkward with newness. Shock hums in quiet apology, deepening the kiss, and Colt groans. His hands on her legs slide up, driving a hitching gasp from her throat as his grip tightens just faintly. And when he pulls away again, breathless, their faces just far enough apart for Shock to see the surprise in his expression, like he's startled by the fact that she would react to him. And Shock laughs again, tilts his head back and kisses him once more. And between their minds, she lets him see her admiration that isn't entirely for his devotion to his duty. The threads of warmth that rose and stayed when he implied he wanted to continue to stay beside her after the war ended. Frames it with an apology for enjoying the kiss despite the circumstances. Colt shudders, gasps against her mouth. An arm slides under her thighs, holding her up, and then his hand is on her back. His fingers curl around her leg, and Shock jolts at the flare of sensation that scatters like lightning across her nerves, breathless with it. She moans before she can help it, and Colt slides his hand up it, just the faintest edge of nails scraping sensitive skin. Shock shudders, fingers clenching tight on his shoulders, legs locked around his hips, and Colt's mind flickers hot and fast to another scenario, somewhere more private, vivid with enough detail to make Shock groan. Ugh, Ventress mutters, and Shock can feel the flare of her knife-edged irritation. Deliberate, Colt wraps his whole hand around her leg, and Shock moans, tips her head back just far enough that her face won't show. With another sound of annoyance, Ventress turns, cloak swirling, and hauls her hood up as she stalks back towards the main street. There's a moment of silence, broken only by the sound of their breathing. Then, slow, careful, Colt leans in, pressing a soft kiss against Shock's leg where it falls over her shoulder. Shock's breath hitches, and she smooths her fingers over the short prickle of his dark hair, then cups his cheek lightly and brushes a thumb across his lips. "Definitely don't apologize for enjoying that," Colt says, rough. Behind them, there's a wolf whistle, loud and piercing and entirely mocking. Colt freezes, and a growl bubbles up in his chest, pure murderous intent spiking. "Blitz!" he snarls. Somewhere out of sight, Blitz cackles. Colt doesn't drop her, though, and Shock laughs a little, shifting enough to grip his hips with her knees, draping her other arm over his shoulders. She tips her head and murmurs, "That was quick thinking, Commander." Deep in his throat, Colt makes a soft, pained sound, eyes sliding shut. "Please, sir, don't call me that right now." Shock chuckles, and at the edge of her senses, she can feel Quinlan approaching, heading for the door of the bar. "You don't care for it?" she asks. "I think he likes it too much," Blitz calls, sounding like he's choking on his laughter. Colt grimaces deeply, and that flush would be adorable except for the deadly edge to his expression. "I'm going to kill him. Your plan will work with just the two of us, right?" With a smile, Shock leans in, pressing a kiss to his forehead. "Why risk it?" she asks, tips her head, and as a tangle of dark emotion and grim determination bursts into clarity, she pitches her voice and says, "Quinlan." In the alley, Quinlan wrenches around, then freezes. Shock can feel the prickle of his suspicion, the way his power, dark-edged, curls around him. There's a pause, and then he says warily, "Look, lady, I don't know what you want." At a mental nudge, Colt loosens his grip, and Shock drops to her feet, not bothering to straighten her clothes. Turns and gives Quinlan a perfectly composed smile, inclining her head to him. "You don't," she says, "but I believe we can help each other." Quinlan's eyes widen, flickering from her to Colt for a long beat, and then he snorts. Mouth curving up, he tilts his head and asks, "Your boyfriend gonna gut me if I offer to buy you a drink, sweetheart?" Shock raises a brow at him, shifting back, and Colt curls a hand around her hip, more than willing to play up the implication. He's tense again, ready to pull his blaster at a moment's notice. But Shock puts a hand on his arm and simply smiles. "As if I couldn't gut you myself, Voss," she says. Quinlan's expression twists just for a moment, and he crosses the space between them, something rueful slipping into his features. "I'm not sure I can take hearing you talk like a Nar Shaddaa gangster without something in my brain breaking, Master T," he says, quiet enough that they won't be overheard. "You definitely look the part, though." Shock chuckles, leaning in, and Quinlan kisses her cheek like they're old friends, sure to put anyone watching at ease. "I've done plenty of undercover work, Quinlan," she reminds him. "This is hardly new." "No, but this time you're risking Dooku seeing you." Quinlan looks her over, frowning, and asks, "What happened?" "A conspiracy," Shock says mildly, "against the Jedi as a whole, engineered, or at least orchestrated, by your new master." Quinlan's expression darkens. "The whole order?" he demands. "How?" "Us," Colt says, quiet. "Chips in our heads to make us obey certain orders." Quinlan flicks a glance at him, distrustful. "And you brought them as backup?" he demands to Shock, hesitates, expression twisting, and asks, "You were kissing him?" "Ventress passed, and she would doubtless know our faces," Shock says. "But yes, I brought Colt. He and his batchmates don't have the chips." "Does the one serving with Ayla?" Quinlan asks, voice tight. "That Bly or whatever, he has one?" "All the rest," Colt confirms, and his frown is equally as unfriendly as Quinlan's narrow look. "There are probably 75 of us left without him. All the other clones, though, they're chipped."
75 out of millions? Sith, Quinlan mutters, and rubs a hand over his face. "Why are you here, Master T? Shouldn't you be dealing with this back on Kamino?"
"Not under these circumstances, Quinlan. The time for direct action has come."
Shock smiles, curling her hands together, and tries not to let the edges of her intent bleed through. Quinlan is already dealing with enough pressure from all the dark emotions here.
"I'm going to find Dooku and bring him to justice."
Quinlan eyes her for a long moment.
"Kill him, you mean,"
he says, though there's no judgment in his voice.
"If I must," Shock allows,
because she refuses to flinch from the reality of the situation.
"He has made himself an enemy of the Republic, and I will defend it however I need to."
She tilts her head, studying Quinlan's expression, and says,
"I don't have the authority of the full council behind me, Quinlan, but if you assist me with this, your mission will be over."
Quinlan grimaces, folding his arms over his chest.
"Unless Dooku's the only one with the keys here, this isn't gonna be enough," he counters.
"I've been trying to figure out who his master is for months now, and all I've gotten is a hell of a lot of nothing. If you end Dooku, what's to stop the Sith Lord from just switching all those chips on right then and there?"
"Aegon is dealing with the chips from his end."
Shock says, and can't help but laugh at the face Quinlan pulls.
You know, he's very fond of you, Quinlan. He wouldn't have tried so hard to bring you in if he wasn't.
You set the council's attack dog on me, Quinlan counters. He almost picked a fight with a hut.
He's rather overzealous sometimes, Shock allows, and ignores Colt's snort. Quinlan, this is necessary. You have gotten nowhere, but this can cripple the Separatists and the Sith in one blow.
Quinlan's breath is rough and frustrated. He's got Ventress with him, he says. You're not going to be able to take on Dooku and Ventress at the same time, even if your boyfriend is good with a blaster.
I have it on decent authority, Shock says mildly, that his fellow commanders are very good too.
Stiffening, Quinlan jerks around, gaze sweeping the alley. From his place leaning against the wall, Blitz offers a sarcastic salute, and up on the rooftops, Havoc waves.
You're hiding them,
Quinlan says after a moment, turning his frown on Shock. How?
The same way I kept you from noticing me, Shock says and smiles at him, entirely amused. Did you think I was elected to the council just for my diplomatic skill, Quinlan?
Quinlan's smile is rueful. Master Tholme always did like you the best out of the High Council, he says. And you're in luck. Ventress was just heading back down to him, but she's distractible. I'll get her out of the way and leave you Dooku. The fact that Dooku is currently on Nar Shaddaa is an unlooked-for blessing, and Shock smiles.
Pleased. Good, she says. But be careful, Quinlan. Ayla will be most displeased if you get yourself hurt where she can't reach you.
Ayla's hardly one to throw stones, Quinlan reports. Four levels down, there's a mansion or whatever passes for it here. Dooku's there, negotiating with the Hutts. Right off the big square. Shock knows it, and she inclines her head.
1 hour, she says,
and Quinlan nods curtly. Then turns and keeps moving, vanishing into the press of bodies on the street at the far end of the alley. There's a long moment of silence, and then Colt says,
You didn't mention he was a double agent.
Shock hums.
I wonder sometimes,
she says, but doesn't dwell. Quinlan walks the edges of the shadows, just as Mace does. It will make him stronger in the end, and she has faith he'll find his path eventually. That doesn't mean his feet will always be steady on it, though. Colt's breath is strained.
Great, he mutters, hand tightening faintly on her hip.
Then, abruptly, he seems to realize what he just did and lets go quickly, taking a half step back.
Sorry, sir. If I don't need to apologize for enjoying the kiss, you certainly don't need to apologize for touching me in ways I like,
Shock tells him, amused. And Colt swallows visibly. His gaze flickers over her mouth, then down, and he has to close his eyes for a moment. Shock can see the images in his mind, the wants where the connection lingers between them. It makes her smile, and she leans in, lays another careful kiss against his mouth.
Thoughts to be explored after our mission, she offers, soft.
Colt's hand curves around her leg, shocking silver-bright pleasure through her, and he kisses the sound she makes off of her lips.
Means you better win, General, he says, rough, when he pulls away.
But Shock can read in his eyes what he actually wants to say. Gentle, deliberate, she rests her forehead against his and says,
We will.
There aren't any other options at this point, just victory. And with so much on the line, Shock refuses to accept anything else. General, Kix says, more than a little frazzled as he rounds the corner. Are you okay?
We're getting there, Anakin says, maybe a little wryly,
and offers him a crooked smile as he slides to his knees, already reaching for his kit.
"Speak for yourself, sir," Fox mutters, eyes still closed.
His nose has stopped bleeding, at least, and Anakin has to breathe out, reminding himself that that's what matters here. Not that he couldn't stop this from happening, but that he saved Fox from anything worse.
Kix's exhale is relief and amusement in equal measure.
"What scratched you, Commander?" he asks, pulling the bacta from his pack. "Those look deep." Fox doesn't answer, which means Anakin can guess.
"Her," he says tightly, nodding at Mareely.
"I guess she got to play with one of the puppets after all."
"Sir,"
Thorn breathes, and Fox's eyes snap open. He struggles to sit up, but Anakin doesn't loosen his grip, keeps Fox leaning back against his chest. And after a few moments, Fox collapses against him with a groan.
"Thorn,"
he manages, reaching out, and Thorn reaches back, clasping wrists tightly.
"Thought the wildlife got you."
"Just a torrent trooper, sir," Thorn says. "Practically a shiny. Stunned us and left us for the general to find."
"Reese, too?"
Fox demands, craning his head back, and Reese immediately kneels down on his other side, offering him a quick salute.
"Both of us," he confirms. "Right in the chest plates."
Fox snorts and hisses as Kix smears bacta over one of the scratches.
"Both of you deserve to get stuck liaising with the Senate commandos for a month for that,"
he threatens, and Thorn winces.
"I think it worked out for the better, though," he points out, and Fox's breath of agreement is rough but amused. "You just don't want to work with the Senate guard," he says, and then twitches, a sharp sound of pain escaping him, as Anakin digs out the roots of the last few encoded suggestions.
Wicked, cunning little things, designed to push Fox towards ruthlessness even when the law should grant mercy. With a grimace, Anakin fills his mind with the sensation of gentle touch, cool grass, warm sun, and tries not to feel sick at the ruin that's probably left to be dealt with. Fox is going to need a hell of a lot of time with the mind healers, and probably a vacation on top of that. Padme had a trip back to Naboo planned for them at some point, and it's not often that Anakin gets to be alone with his wife, but maybe he can suggest dragging Fox along with them. After this, he's going to need it, desperately, and he did just save Anakin from a Sith prophet.
"These aren't healing," Kix says, grim. "General, you're sure it was her? She looks human, but..."
"She was a Sith," Anakin says grimly. "There's no telling what she did to herself, or put on her nails, or anything else. He's not a Force healer, isn't anything close." But he tips Fox's head back so he can see the scratches. 3 of them, slanting down across his face from right to left, and only just missing his eyes. They feel dark, like there are threads of shadow twisted into the wounds. Anakin can probably pull them out, but...
"I can make it so they'll heal, but they'll scar," he tells Fox.
"Or you can wait for a real healer." Fox lets out a breath, closes his eyes.
"Do it," he says, and one corner of his mouth curves just faintly. "Cody's always playing up his scar. I might as well do the same, right?"
Anakin snorts. I've heard him tell Shinies so many stories about how he got that scar. He says, "I bet it happened when he fell in the shower or something."
"Ask Shank and find out," Kix says with a roll of his eyes.
Anakin grimaces and meets Fox's disbelieving stare with complete agreement.
"I think I'd rather kiss a Wookiee," he says, and Fox nods.
"An insane Wookiee," he confirms.
"Cowards,"
Kix says mildly, and glances at Anakin.
"Whenever you're ready, General."
Anakin carefully splays a hand over Fox's face. "Sorry about this, Commander," he murmurs, and narrows his eyes, trying to work the little threads of darkness free. They're stubborn, clinging, and each one coming loose makes Fox twitch and hiss. Anakin can feel his pain. He hates Marie Lee in that moment, hates her so much he wishes she was alive so he could kill her again, and with a shock like cold water, Anakin remembers Padme on the ground, terrified, terrified of him, and he has to swallow, has to take a breath and crush those thoughts, that darkness in himself. It's not going to happen. He won't let it happen. And if that takes reminding himself 100,000 times to be a better person, a good Jedi, that's fine. He can do that. All three guards around him, clear victims of the Sith. Anakin doesn't know how he could do anything else. "Sorry, Fox," he whispers, and draws the last clinging power free. Fox's groan is ragged, and he turns his face away like he's trying to hide the pain there. Anakin understands the impulse. He hates it when people see him in pain, but carefully he loops his arms around Fox, curls them there, lets Fox bury his face in the bend of his arm, hiding from the rest of the world, even if he can't hide from Anakin, and says, "You saved my life, Commander. Don't think I'm about to forget that." "I wanted her dead for me, too," Fox mutters, but he wraps a hand around Anakin's bicep and breathes carefully for a moment. Anakin doesn't point out that he didn't break free of Marie Lee's hold until he saw Anakin in danger. Doesn't push, doesn't argue, just lets him hide for a moment. When Kix silently offers up the tub of Bacta, Anakin takes it and starts applying the gel himself. Fox doesn't even try to protest. "Any chance you can remember where the Sith Lord's ship is?" Anakin asks, quiet, and Fox makes a sound of agreement. "Near where he was meeting Lord Jedgar," he says, "two levels up on the south side." "Right, because of course it wouldn't be that easy," Anakin thinks grimly. "They're going to have to walk right past Palpatine, who's the Sith Lord. Anakin isn't going to get any sort of chance to hide from this." "Jeck and Thier will be there too," Thorne says quietly. "They're guarding the Chancellor personally." Kix rocks back sharply, like he was just struck. "The Chancellor?" he demands. "Like, the Supreme Chancellor?" "The Sith Lord," Anakin says grimly. "He betrayed the Republic. He's not the Chancellor anymore." Anakin's glance at him is full of worry, but he nods, swallows. "All right," he says, only a little unsteady. "We need to get past him and get Jeck and Thier. Maybe Fox can call them away?" "I'll do it," Thorne says immediately. "If it's the Commander, they'll want to know what happened to Lady Marie Lee." "No," Fox rasps, and slowly, carefully forces himself to sit up. Anakin lets him, if unhappily, and eyes the slump of his shoulders, the curve of his back, with something close to trepidation. "I'll do it. Palpatine won't care as long as we don't interrupt him. I'll say I heard something and need to investigate." Standard protocol would be to leave one of the guards with Palpatine and take the other. Hopefully they'll be too far below Palpatine's notice for him to care. Anakin breathes out, then nods and says, "Get them around a corner and we can knock them out. I won't have time to undo the force control, but I can keep them unconscious until we get away. And by that time, hopefully they'll have found Master Windu and the others, and Mace can help him." "Yes, sir." Fox's nod is curt, but when Anakin rises and offers him a hand, he takes it gratefully, lets Anakin pull him to his feet, sways there for a moment, and then catches his breath, pressing a hand to his head. "Criff. It's going to feel like you got your head hollowed out for a while," Anakin says, an apology, even if he doesn't put it in precisely those terms. At least until we get you to the mind healers. I can take things out, but I don't know how to fill in the gaps. Fox closes his eyes, but nods. Anakin can feel him summon up the sensations Anakin gave him. Cool grass and warm sun, and it makes something turn over in his chest. He helped. Even in some small way, he managed to help.
I feel better, sir, he says. Thank you.
He looks up, meeting Anakin's eyes and holding them, and says,
Really? Thank you for rescuing us.
We haven't rescued you yet, Anakin says, but we're getting there. Besides, I promised to introduce you to Padme, didn't I?
Fox's smile is small and a little crooked. I'll hold you to it, sir, he returns, and looks around.
Pauses and then grimaces, running a hand over his hair. It's slightly too long to be regulation, Anakin thinks. In the top commander of the Coruscant Guard, that's interesting when it comes to his personality.
I have no idea what happened to my bucket, he says after a moment.
Fox is so rarely without his helmet that Palpatine will definitely notice a change there, Anakin thinks, frowning. He raises a hand, narrowing his eyes, and from a landing halfway up, something bounces, skids. A moment later, Fox's helmet topples over the edge and drops straight towards them, and Fox catches it with a sound of relief. Careful of the scratches, he pulls it on, and then nods to Anakin and says,
Ready when you are, sir.
Anakin caps the bacta and hands it back to Kix, entirely sure that they're going to need it again all too soon. Glances up. Hang on, Commander, he says, and reaches out, smearing away the lipstick mark imprinted on the cheek of Fox's helmet. Rubs it off until no trace of any color but the guard's crimson remains, and then gives Fox a grin.
Pink's not really your color. I'm sure Padme would say the same thing.
Fox's huff is tiredly amused, even over the speakers.
Appreciated, sir, he says,
and presses his fingers over the spot where the mark was. Anakin doesn't think he's imagining the shiver that runs through Fox, the flicker of horror that's instantly buried behind duty. But despite it, Fox squares his shoulders, straightens his spine, and looks up the wide, sweeping staircase, takes a breath, then says,
All right, General, follow me.